Mr. Douglas Reel, 16. We're just talking about medical conditions and things inside the camp. What were the medical facilities like? How were you treated?
Well, there must have been actually. I never had any medical treatments. I say I got yellow jaundice. It didn't inconvenience a great deal, but I had a great big pot belly with a stodge because it tend to swell you up, and when you were hungry, you ate. I got yellow jaundice, but I never had any treatment for it. But I suppose there was a medical parade, like, for people who were sick. But I was never really that bad that I had to go to see the medical officer or anything.
What about contact with home? Did you start to get letters there?
You could. We got a card. We got a card sent home once a month, I think. And them who had been there a long time got me. I didn't get any mail because I hadn't been there long enough to other times she got me address. But they did get mail there, the long-termers that had been there a long time. But I didn't get any mail. It wasn't really a bad time, apart from being hungry. And
did you fill your time in whilst you were there then?
Well,
you mentioned sport, and
you could play cards. You know, there's around that cards. There was all sorts of sport. You could go around walking, get exercise. You filled it. The time was filled in.
Did you have to work there?
No, there was no work. Nobody worked there. There might have been work parties go out for some reason, but mostly were in the camp. As I said, this fella used to come in with his horse and cart. He used to go and cut and used to. That's how you spent your money. There was a shop, bit of a shop thing. You could buy toothpaste, toothbrush, things like that. It was very, very limited and very expensive. Very expensive. You could buy. I think you could get a razor blade for them that wanted to shave. You could buy a razor and shave. You kept yourself, you tried to keep yourself clean, neat and tidy. It wasn't easy, but you no need to let yourself go. Some lads did, some grew beards and grew tash, but I always kept myself clean shaven. Try to keep yourself clean, healthy and fit. But I didn't have a really, really bad time in that camp. I've got to be honest about that. It wasn't a good time. It wasn't an outlet what I was to come to later on,
How did you keep yourselves fit whilst you were in the camp?
Well, I used to do a lot of walking. Because of a big camp, you could do several. These were three satories in each, and there was four or five of these compound places. And there was, there was always something going on. There was always something going on where you could get interested in.
Anything that spring to mind that you did in there? Any of the activities that you used to get up to that you?
Well, as I say, there was the. The big Monopoly game held every day, which there's always a queue. You had to be up early to get in the queue to get it because there only takes so many, and to try and get the game finished. It used to go on and on and on. It was amazing, and it was quite amusing. It was good, and to take it very seriously, see, they would, as if it was real. But to them, it was real, and them watching it was real. I used to spend a lot of time watching them play the Monopoly. Because they had a fellow then, he used to auction he must have been an auctioneer in real life. As I say, you've got all sorts of people in a camp like that. As I say, he was an expert watchmaker. He made a clock. There was tinsmith, people who knew it all. There was all sorts of things that people were experts in certain. Those tailors were all sorts.
What about clothing? Did you make yourself your own clothing, or were you issued with?
Just had what you were issued with. I got a uniform.
Did the Italians give you anything to wear that would signify perhaps that you were prisoners?
No, just the uniform with a big red patch on the back, which you didn't wear your tunic much. You know, it was hot. You just went around naked to the waist, or perhaps a singlet on. I used to wear a shirt because I was affected with sunburn. Yeah, but I was, couldn't stand the sun.
How did you get on with the guards at this camp? What were they like?
Well, didn't have much contact with guards. They just wouldn't speak to you, and you know they maybe had orders, but they were mostly it was all compound, and it was high walls. It wasn't wire. It was walls. It was a big high walls, but and of course there was guards up on the wall, but you didn't really come into contact with them. There was a certain amount of contact, as I say, there must have been, because they had wireless in the camp. Because we got the news, and you couldn't do that without a wireless, because they could have built a crystal set, you know, they could have built a crystal set, but they still have to have earphones or some form of. But they must have had wireless. I didn't know, because that was a secret in that camp. As I say, I was a newcomer, and I used to name me mucker, me mucker Arthur. We used to have a difference. You used to get cigarettes in your Red Cross parcel. Like, it was 100 cigarettes, or 50 each. And he went and swapped them for these some vile Italian bloody, I forget the name of them now, black, horrible things they were. Oh shit, I'm getting 3-1, man, 3-1. I said, not horrible. I said, don't do that again. But he thought he was doing a good trade, because he'd smoke them like anything, but I didn't like them. I smoked the ordinary ones, like English cigarettes, but I didn't like they had a name. It's on my tongue end. It's right on my tongue end. I can't think of it. But they were very black sort of tobacco. Harsh on your throat and harsh on your mouth. I hated them. Challenge you to smoke them.
I just want to go back and ask a thing about. You mentioned radios being in the camp. How was news distributed
word of mouth? There was mostly yes, a Tory commander. They were company sergeants and majors, you know, and regimental sergeant majors in charge. They were then. They had a little place on their own, and they used to get the news and give it out. They would tell you, you know. But it was word of mouth where you got the trial. You get your news. We kept up to date with the news. There was a bulletin nearly every day, is it telling you? And because it was amplified a bit, and you know, they're not far away. They're coming up the. But it was. They didn't seem to get much nearer. But they did eventually must have got near, because as I say, this day came when the guards just vanished. It was a shock. Nobody there.
We'll come on to that in a minute. I just wanted to go back and talk about morale and how that affected, how news of the outside world affected morale. Was it
yes, it had a tremendous effect on you. To know we were winning, you know, that we'd beaten them, we'd shifted them out to Africa, we took Sicily, and we're coming up and fighting in Italy, Italy itself, and Italy, oh, they're doomed, you know, we had this great pessimistic, optimistic feeling of Italy was going to go, and there was rumours that they would capitulate, and we were expecting being released, you see.
Did that have any effect on the guards? And did it change the relationship between yourselves and the guards?
Well, we didn't have a lot of contact with the guards. I didn't anyway, and most of them didn't. There would be contact with certain ones, you know.
I guess there would be some bribery and things amongst guards.
Well, I found that through my prisoner of war time period, guards could always be bribed. You see, we were in a position of getting a Red Cross parcel, and they had an outlet, got an outlet as good, a bar of Cadbury's chocolate, English cigarettes, sweets, that they were absolute luxuries to them. You know, if they could go to the wife for take a bar of chocolate, they would give you your right arm nearly to get it. So that they were always rivals to bribery. You had it, you had the means. You had the means, you see, to do it. Because they had nout. They were rattle-tattle.
That obviously said something about life outside the camp in Italy. Obviously there were deprivations there if they didn't have access to this sort of thing.
No, we didn't. We never got out of the camp, never. We didn't have get maybe news I know it was near Ancona. I didn't really know exactly where it was. I knew there was a place called Ancona near. That was the nearest big town, Ancona. You could see the mountains, and you could see there was tremendous fields of tomatoes. And I was surprised. You could see them because they weren't like our tomatoes. They weren't round. They were pear shaped, quite big. But they weren't, and there was fields of them, you know, around the camp. You could see them because you could see from one part of the camp. You could see over the wall to the country beyond, and you could see these fields and peasants to work in them, like the Italian people, I suppose. But I remember they didn't look like tomatoes. But that's the way they grow there, apparently. But I was always imagining tomato, like a greenhouse tomato, round, you know. We used to get tomatoes in the camp to put in the storage. Pretty plentiful there. And grapes. Sometimes called grapes. The lads was to bribe, because there used to be contractors coming to the camp to do different things. They'd bribe them, you see. They would fetch things in to get for exchange from something from a Red Cross parcel.
What sort of things did you exchange? What came into the camp? What sort of commodities?
Grapes, tomatoes. Mostly food, but there was other things. But mostly it was done by the higher ups, the company sergeant majors and quartermasters and things. They had a sort of a hierarchy of their own, and they used to do most, you know, dealing, and they would deal with you. They were sort of in between. We didn't get much contact with the with the guards or anybody like that.
How did you organise yourselves then? You mentioned there was a hierarchical system. How did that work?
Well,
they were based on rank.
They kept themselves to themselves, and they got little bits of perks, I suppose, you know. But they weren't not a lot. Not went much better off than us. But it's a sort of a difference between sergeant's mess, you know, and the men's canteen sort of thing. That's sort of you could. They kept themselves to themselves. They were in the same boat more or less, but they would have had a little better because they had their own little place.
Were the officers kept separate?
There were no officers, just non-commissioned officers. No officers in that camp. Just non-commissioned officers. As I say, the sergeant majors, regimental sergeant majors, they sort of ran things. And they were the ones who most came in contact with the authorities, or you can't call them. Or we didn't have much contact with them.
Was there a black market? How did that work?
Well, it wasn't really a black market. It was an exchange. If you had any exchange, you'd go along, and every day there was a mark, and a man would put it up. He'd stand and look at it, and he'd say, "Well, you'd hand him up," and he'd say what you wanted, and he'd put it up. I've got a tin of whatever it was, or maybe something from a Red Cross past, maybe cigarettes, maybe food, maybe chocolate, maybe, and maybe clothing, because some of them got parcels, with the clothing, and got a tin of peas. I wanted a tin of pineapples, and there was always, nearly always, you got, because the people have got different tastes. And celery cuts were never very popular. But they must be good for you, or they wouldn't have put them in the parcel. But they used to get pieces of celery in lake water, sort of salty water, and they were never very popular then.
What other sorts of things did you get in the Red Cross parcels?
Well, as I say, you got chocolate, cigarettes, margarine, but certainly fundamentals. Certain things used to vary between some parcels and some, but there was the main thing. There was always cigarettes, 50 cigarettes, a bar Cadbury's chocolate, biggish bar Cadbury's chocolate. There was fruit, tinned of course, tinned fruit. You might get tinned fish. Vegetables, tins, it was all tins, there was no any fresh stuff. Put quite a variety of things in, and it kept you alive, kept you fit, kept you healthy. Well thought out, very well thought out, Red Cross parcel. And then, of course, some of them, as I say, they've got supplemented with parcels from home. It gets clothing and cigarettes, and with cigarettes you can buy things. Cigarettes with the money,
a kind of currency.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cigarettes via currency, common currency. You could buy anything with cigarettes that you wanted. So the non-smoker came off well. I don't know. I can't remember meeting a non-smoker. They all nearly all smoked. It wasn't a bad camp, I suppose. It was, in fact, in comparison with somewhere else, it was a good camp. After that camp, I really did meet some knew what prisoner of war was, you know.
What was discipline like in the camp?
Well, in what respect, like?
Well, I wanted to ask about both yourselves. Was there discipline amongst yourselves and with the guards as well?
Well, discipline was fairly good.
Discipline amongst yourselves?
There was the odd fight. There was a fight now and again. Like, you know, people would fall out. But normally it was just like more or less same as civilian life. You had your ups, your downs, your good periods, your bad periods. You got sometimes bad news from home. Those that lived in London, there was the bombing, and you could get letters, and they were worried. You lived with no women. And no freedom. But apart from that, it was somewhat similar to living in a very, very poor community sort of thing. Of course, you were all together. Everybody's in the same boat. So you sort of had a camaraderie with each other that, you know, you knew anybody was better off than you. And you all had the common aim to look forward to getting out, release, freedom. That was always your mainstay.
I was going to come on and ask about, were there any instances of stealing amongst the men?
Oh yes. You had stealing going off.
How was that dealt with?
Physical punishment, and people shunning you if you stole anything, if anybody stole anything, if he was found out, got a pretty good hiding. Everybody would, and then anybody would speak to them. So it's just because stealing, that's one of the worst things. When anybody's gotten out. The stealer is a terrible crime. So there wasn't a lot, but there was theft.
Can you remember any instances of that?
No, there was one. I remember fighting and two people, not from our story, but they had a sort of a semi sort of trial by the people in that story. And if they were guilty, found guilty, proved guilty, they got a bloody good thumping. Everybody went and gave them a hard punch. A few hard punches, and got black and blue. Didn't get off for it. But did I say it was very rare, very rare. People didn't steal. But there was no... If anybody did steal, you know, you couldn't prove it. You had to find out who it was, because people wandering. But nobody had much to steal.
I suppose food and cigarettes.
Cigarettes.
Are the two most valuable things.
Well, they're the most easy to hide. You know, to cover up. If you had a tin of something, would be not so easy to hide. Cigarettes were the common thing. And yet, it's funny, there wasn't much thievery.
Was there a great deal of gambling?
Ah, yes, there was gambling. They used to play cards, you know. But... There wasn't in that camp a lot of gambling. Not organised sort of gambling. In the other camps where I went later, there was organised sort of gambling. But not in that camp. There was as much gamble. You'd gamble among yourselves. Have a bet. I'll bet you 2 cigarettes that they'll take this place before the end of the week. You know. And you paid up if you've lost. You paid up if you know. That sort of thing.
What about cards and?
If you play, cards for cigarettes. That was your common currency, and that was, as I say, there would be maybe a sort of a sweepstake. Somebody'd raffle somewhat or something, and then they would draw the number. Maybe pay 2 cigarettes, a ticket, 3 cigarettes, and then they would. Whoever won it, and he got what he wanted, and somebody got the whatever it was that was being raffled.
Did that cause any problems, gambling?
Not really, no. No, as I say, the stakes weren't really high enough to you could use the butter off some heavy smokers with butter off the next parcel, you know. And of course, there's always the food at the late afternoon when you got your food. That was always something to look forward to. Stodge, because that was after all. Your Red Cross parcel was your vitamins, like sort of your pills to keep you going, but your main food was your stodge, and that was the thing you looked forward to every day. And you'd wander up to the cookhouse, and they'd have fires, and they had these big, sort of big cauldron things with a big handle on them. They used to put a pool through them and carry them down, and then your insurers, the higher insurers, would dish it out, and everybody would get in then those seconds or afters, was any left, you could. You got your turns to queue up, and you know you got your turn. Everybody got their turn, then come round again. It was generally maybe 10 to 12, 15 portions left for a second. No, they couldn't run out. They couldn't give enough to that they didn't get everybody get it. So they had a limit to what. There was always a bit left over, and then that was given to. You had your rotation.
Who cooked it?
Hmm?
Who cooked the food?
Eh?
Who cooked the food?
Oh, they had people. There was Italians there in charge, like, but they had people, prisoners, did the cutting up and chopping up and cooking.
What were the main ingredients of this stodge?
Well, there was tomatoes. I say there was tomatoes, nearly always tomatoes, and all sorts of vegetables, weeds, anything to make it out. It wasn't thick, but it wasn't all that watery. Some days it was varied, according to what was in season, you know, and what they could get hold of. And of course, there was always bones in. Boiled in it, and there was a certain amount of meat. If you got a bit of meat, you were lucky. But there was meat. I don't know what sort of meat it was, but if you got a little bit of meat, there was wouldn't be a big mutt, you know, just a small amount, perhaps size of an ox or a cube or something. But it was meat, so that if you were lucky, when they dipped the scoop in and give you it, you might get meat. It was a gamble, that thing. But people don't—they don't realise how hungry you know. And
I guess you must have been hungry most of the time.
Oh yes, you were always hungry. You were always hungry. There was always a temptation of your Red Cross parcel. You'd hang on, try and make it last. Well, you rarely did make it last till the next issue, like. But you try sometimes. Some people just gobbled up straight away and get no pay for a week. I didn't do that. Like, I always try to spin it out a bit at a time. But some didn't. I see my mucker, he would eat the bloody lot. He did. To finish, I said, look, we'll halve it. And you get your half and do what you like with it. And I said, no, I keep it. But that didn't work because his was gone in 2 days. And then he'd sit looking at you and you just couldn't. But mind, the man was hungry. He'd been starved for a long time. He was thin as a skeleton.